Now, secondly, we come to the development of the bodhicitta, or the will to enlightenment. And one develops this, first of all, by developing compassion for all living beings. This is a sentiment or an aspiration which resounds or reverberates throughout the whole of Buddhism. The development of love and compassion for all living beings. But the Tibetans here, as elsewhere, they give their own particular twist, if you like, their own particular colouring to this universal Buddhist idea. They say that one should look upon, one should regard all living beings as being just like one's own parents, one's own mother, one's own father. Because the Tibetans, like most other Buddhists, they believe very strongly in rebirth and reincarnation. And they believe that if you look far back enough, that everybody you know, everybody you meet, has at some time or other, in some previous life or other, been your mother or your father. So the Tibetans attach a great deal of importance to this in practice. They emphasize it very, very strongly. And for Tibetans, this is a very, very vivid and a very real thing. To us, of course, even if we do happen to be Buddhist, sometimes the idea of rebirth and reincarnation, though we accept it intellectually, perhaps, with more or less of reservation, it doesn't really get into our bones. But in the case of the Tibetans, it is really in their bones and their blood, and they feel it very strongly. And if they are serious-minded, if they practice any kind of tantric exercise, they can actually feel that the people that they meet at one time in the remote past were as closely related to them as that. And therefore they feel that they should be kind to them, they should love them, they should be affectionate towards them, and treat them properly and decently. So therefore the tantric tradition emphasizes that inasmuch as one has this love, one has this compassion for all living beings, all sentient beings, one should develop the resolve to help them, to deliver them from suffering. And the Tibetan tradition especially emphasizes it's only if you feel for others as though they were your own parents that you will feel the urge really to help them in difficulties. And they give a rather beautiful sort of illustration for this. And they say that suppose one day you're going through the bazaar. This can be a common experience in Tibet as in India. You're going through the bazaar and there are people selling vegetables and all sorts of other things, pots and pans all around you. And there's a noise and a crying of goods of various kinds. And maybe as you go through the market, you notice that in some corner there's some disturbance going on, some sort of a row. This often happens in bazaars. No one takes too much notice. Not until people start killing one another. But for some reason or other, you sort of stop and you just look. You see there's quite a crowd and there seems to be someone in the middle who's sort of getting the worst of it. So just out of curiosity, perhaps you think, well, let me go and have a look. So you draw nearer and you see that there's a great crowd of people. And for some reason or other, they're beating and thrashing someone in the middle, who's down on the floor, I mean, kicking and knocking over the head. So you think, well, it's not too good, but anyway, it's none of my business sort of thing. But anyway, out of curiosity, you go a little nearer, and then you see, well, it's rather a pity. It's a woman that they're beating, all these big, hefty men. It's a woman, that, in fact, it's an old woman that's being beaten. And you get a little bit nearer, you get a little bit interested. You're still not very interested, but as you get into the throng, as you really look, you see, good heavens, this is my own mother being beaten. And you didn't know. Mother apparently has gone to the bazaar and there she is. She got into some trouble and she's being beaten. So at once you feel tremendous compassion, a tremendous love for the mother wells up in the heart then. Because you recognize that the person who is being beaten, the person who is suffering, is near and dear to you. So therefore the Tibetan spiritual masters say that if you can see in each suffering human being your own mother or your own father or someone near and dear to you, then the love, then the compassion will well up in your heart, otherwise not. And this is why they emphasize this so much, because we can see so much suffering all around us. We can see people having their heads cut off, or we can read in the newspaper that 70 people were killed in an accident, or 25 people were killed in a fire, or several hundred killed yesterday in Vietnam. We just turn over to the next page of the newspaper and look at the sports results. And we don't think anything of it because no one near and dear to us is involved. This is why we are so, in a sense, callous. But the Tibetan tradition says one shouldn't look like that. One should try to see, try to feel all living beings as deeply, as intimately related with oneself. So they make use in this connection of this idea of karma, rebirth, reincarnation, and they say, well, try to feel, try to look back, and try to act as though, as in fact is the case, all the people, all the beings with whom you are at present in contact are in fact your own reincarnated mothers, fathers and so on, or previous lives, or previous existences. So when one sees all the beings around one, all the suffering beings around one, in this way, in this light, as one's own parents, as it were, reborn, then, out of compassion, one develops a tremendous urge to deliver them, to lead them on the right path, to lead them to Buddhahood, to lead them to enlightenment. And therefore one makes a sort of vow, a sort of resolve, a sort of resolution, that one will gain enlightenment, gain Buddhahood, through the practice of the Vajrayana, through the practice of the Tantra, so that one may function as a spiritual teacher in the world. So this Mula Yoga, this foundation yoga, consists mainly in the repetition, like the repetition of a mantra, of a formula expressive of one's resolve, of one's determination to gain enlightenment, to gain Buddhahood, for the sake and for the benefit of all living beings. And this is, of course, the famous Bodhisattva vow. So one may say that, in brief, the second of these Mula Yogas consists in the repetition again and again and again, in a certain way, according to the instructions of the teacher, of a formula expressive of the Bodhisattva vow, one's determination to gain enlightenment, not just for the sake of one's own personal emancipation, but for the good and welfare and benefit of the whole world of sentient beings. So this too is to be repeated and recited 100,000 times. And you'll notice, of course, that the Vajrayana is very fond of repetition. This is one of the great features of the Vajrayana, that they do this 10,000 times, do that 100,000 times, do that 1,000,000 times, over and over and over again. And the reason for this is that there's a tremendous need to penetrate, to break through, if you like, into the unconscious mind. Usually we just repeat something once and we think we've understood it and we put it aside. That's that. I vow to gain enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. Well, what could be easier than that? That's the Bodhisattva vow. You've repeated it, you've recited it, you've taken it. But there's not even a scratch on the surface of the mind. So therefore the Vajrayana says, go on repeating it, go on repeating it. Say it 1,000 times, 10,000 times, 100,000 times, 1,000,000 times. And maybe, when you've done it, maybe 100,000, 200,000 times, the meaning will begin to percolate, begin, as it were, to soak down below the level of the conscious mind into the unconscious mind and start influencing it there where it really matters. So 100,000 repetitions of the Bodhisattva vow at the time of the actual practice, and in between, as it's called, in between two sessions of actual practice of the foundation yogas, one should reflect in a certain way. One should reflect that with every outgoing breath that one breathes, with every outgoing breath, one's good qualities, such as they are, fall upon others like moonlight and confer happiness upon them. In other words, one should feel that one's effect, one's influence upon others, is beneficent and positive, just like that of the moonlight. Here, of course, obviously, we've got a reminiscence of Indian tradition, because in India, after the heat of the day at night, the moonlight is cool and soft and beautiful, and people appreciate it very much. So your influence on others should be like that. You should fall like moonlight upon others, and your whole influence should be soft and gentle and beneficent. So those who practice the Mula Yogas have to ask themselves, well, whether they have upon others the effect. Would your best friend compare you with moonlight? You have to ask yourself that question. And then with every ingoing breath, one should feel that the sins of all beings, the weaknesses, the imperfections of all beings, are entering one's own body and are being absorbed into, annihilated in, the will to enlightenment itself. And also, if one has time, one should practice the Brahma Viharas, the four sublime abodes, that is to say, love, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. As these are known to most of you, I think, no need to describe them in detail. So, the Brahma Viharas are incidentally common practices in both the Hinayana and the Mahayana. So we may say that the development of the bodhicitta, the will to enlightenment, and the repetition of the bodhisattva vow represents the Mahayana, the great vehicle or great way component in the four foundation yogas.